Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard today. It's Grandy and Dibs. Willard back on Monday, enjoying some time off around the holidays, as we all got to spend at least a little bit of time off around the holidays.
Yeah,
it was nice.
No doubt.
Good
no
to be
doubt.
Back, though.
Yeah.
Happy to be here with you, Dibs.
Yeah, great to be back. I was hoping to go to that Monday night game and join you guys for the crossover down there at the Hilton, but your boy was under the weather. I had to make a late call. Yeah,
late
exactly.
Scratch. Carter. You were on the scratch. Injury report. Questionable.
Yeah,
game time decision.
Yeah, and it's funny because by the time it got to like 3 in the afternoon that day, I actually was feeling well enough to make the trip. But
much too late at that point.
Much too late to
You would
leave.
Not have gotten into the game until it was halftime.
Exactly. So to leave Moraga at 3 and head on down and try to get in the Hilton, and you guys would have been done and the whole thing. But
I'm out.
Unfortunately, I actually did watch the game at home, which didn't make me feel much better.
It was a pretty fun game.
Entertaining game. Great game to watch. Yeah. But, you know, it was one of those things where everything was going well, and that offensive lineman with Austin Pleasance and some guy named Heck or
Charlie Heck.
Charlie Heck, what the heck?
Something like that.
That offensive line did
Nick
pretty
Zakel.
Well. Yeah, and Debo and, you know, Garendo was doing his thing, and Brock Purdy was making money. And
Ricky
then,
Pearsall.
Right?
How about that?
The whole deal, and, you know, Juwan Jennings getting into fights and stuff, and
yeah.
Kittle doing what he does, and shout out the Pro Bowl list, which is out, and 4 Niners are Pro Bowlers, Kittle among them. I think it was Kittle and Warner.
Juszczyk and who else?
Oh, Bosa.
Bosa. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Was that on the air or was that in our ear? I can
on
never
the
tell.
Air.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It is hard to tell.
Well, then come a little stronger. Don't be so whispery.
Sorry.
Guy's 6'9". 6'9", 214.
I thought that our own Carter Chickering might get in the game at left tackle at some point on
Should've.
Monday night.
Yeah.
Your Lions -3 hit.
Yeah. I don't know if that made the air, but
it did make the air. We put it in there for Fade the Diver for you. And one thing that I found out just now, actually,
yep.
was we had a trifecta on Lions -3. You, Guru, and Mr. Carter Chickering. I don't know if you know this, Dibs, but most people around here fade Carter much like they fade you.
Man.
So the fact that three of you were on the same pick and it hit, I mean, it was a Christmas, New Year's miracle.
Totally.
What happened on Monday night.
Yeah, that one to me was made perfect sense. And then you watch the game, it's like, oh my God, the Niners might win this game. They look so good offensively. And
no punts.
No punts. They didn't punt at all. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
Detroit punted once, right?
Did Detroit punt once?
Once, yeah, for sure.
Niners didn't because, you know, they missed field goals.
That's right. We can get into that down the road. But anyway, Greg Cosell coming up in 15.
Yeah, coming up after a break, coming up in about 10 minutes. So we'll get into that with Greg Cosell in just a little bit. But let's get back to Warriors here, talking about what's one thing the Warriors can do in 2025 to make sure this year is brighter and better than what happened in 2024. Let's go out to the phone lines, 888-957-9570. Jason in Oakland is standing by. What's up, Jason? Happy New Year. How you doing?
Happy New Year to you guys. So what's going on? But good afternoon. But this is what I want to say that nobody talked about. They talked about it, but they, you know, a little bit. We here because of Draymond Green. And it started with the Kevin Durant situation. Then it goes to Jordan Poole. Then it goes to the Warriors paying Draymond Green. Then Klay Thompson feeling slighted of not getting paid because of Draymond Green and probably other things. So you got to look at it in the sense of if the Warriors would have got rid of Draymond Green and brought somebody in that probably would have scored a little bit more and did a little bit more, or maybe not as much as defensively, but did enough to replace Draymond Green. We may have Jordan Poole if he never hit Jordan Poole. We may have Klay Thompson if Klay Thompson didn't feel slighted. So you got to leave it up to the management of not assessing the situation and the future of the Warriors. Because after Draymond Green and Steph gone, if we would have had Poole at this point in time right now, with the scoring in the fourth quarter, nobody can take nobody off the dribble, Jordan Poole can do that. But Warriors chose Draymond Green, and now we're looking in 2025. The Warriors probably don't make the playoff. Eventually, they're about to trade him. After next season, if he's still here throughout this season, they're going to trade him soon. And he's the guy that messed up the future of the Warriors. And management didn't have the foresight to see it that we need to get rid of this guy because he's tearing down the franchise. We lost Kevin Durant because he calling him out his name on the sideline during a primetime game over because he didn't pass the ball to Kevin Durant, one of the best players out of him, Klay, and Steph in their prime, and he's taking the ball down and fumbling and falling down, kicking LeBron James. I don't have nothing against Draymond Green, but the Warriors' Brad should have been got rid of him.
Jason, appreciate the call. I'll say this, Dibs. I think there is a growing number of Warrior fans that feel the way that Jason does, that Draymond Green, not necessarily that Draymond Green is the reason for all the issues the Warriors are in, but that Draymond Green is a player the Warriors should consider trading away to try to improve the team.
Well, I wonder what that looks like as well, because I know Draymond doesn't make as much as Steph, but again, you're going to have to trade Draymond to a team that's really good. Draymond's not going to go willingly to a team that's not good. And I know he doesn't have a no-trade clause, but you know how players can be if they don't want to go to a destination. And Draymond's made enough money to where he can kind of force his way to a team that he wants to go to. So what's the team and what's the return that you're going to get from that team? Because if you're looking at contending teams, you're going to need a contending team to want to get rid of a player who makes what Draymond makes, which is, what, darn near $25 million a year? I don't have the exact number in front of me. Actually, I do. Draymond's making 24, and he's on the hook for $53 million over the next two seasons. So you're going to need a team to not only think that he fits now and want to give up $24 million worth of their guy, but also want to take Draymond Green for his 35 and 36-year-old seasons. Yeah. And already we see that Draymond is, no disrespect, he's breaking down, as most players in his category would. And Evan had it earlier, talking about all the minutes he's played and all the games, the postseason games, and he's playing the five, and it's really physical, and you're going to get Draymond now, and Draymond is not what he was a couple of years ago when they won the title, so you're going to trade for Draymond now and expect him to do what for you as a winning team?
Yeah, our caller, Jason, has a lot of people on the Comcast Business text line agreeing with him. The 510, the 262, the 757... The 707,
man, a lot of area codes.
All agreeing, all over the place, agreeing with what Jason said. Now, the 262 asks the important question. Do you think the Warriors' loyalty to Green is because of Steph? Not solely, And it's not solely because of Steph. The Warriors are loyal to Draymond because Draymond has been one of the main reasons why they've won four championships. They do not win any without Draymond Green. There's no doubt about that. But I also think part of the reason why the Warriors re-signed Draymond and part of the reason why I would be shocked if the Warriors were to trade Draymond is because he's Steph's guy and Steph will have to sign off on that. And to this point, Steph hasn't signed off on it. I think the only way Steph signs off on a trade of Draymond is if he also wants to be traded himself. If Steph wants to be here, I think Draymond is here. And as far as I'm concerned, Steph wants to end his career as a Warrior, which means Draymond is going to at least until Steph retires.
Right, and that's almost exactly the same time. It's coterminous. They each have two more years after this one. So for me, we can talk about whether or not Draymond Green was the reason they got rid of Jordan Poole and the reason why Kevin Durant left and all the rest of it. But Draymond Green has delivered four titles, not solely, but he's been a part of four championships.
They don't win any without him.
Right, as has Steph. Yep. And, you know, people who want to say, well, if Draymond wouldn't have done that to LeBron, they'd have five. No, they wouldn't, because if they win that title, KD doesn't come here. So you don't get the next two without Draymond, you know, popping LeBron James and the family jewels. So we can all play this, the what-if game.
Yeah, that was a light-years ahead move by Draymond right there.
Right. He's thinking, we're going to lose this one, but we're going to get KD and we're going to win the next two. And really, they would have won the next three if it wasn't for two catastrophic injuries. Yeah. But whatever you want to think about Draymond Green now, you can't discount what Draymond Green was then. And so now, yes, Draymond Green's making $24 million, and he wants to go, if he wants to leave, he wants to go to a team that can contend. So what's your move? Who's the team, and what's your move? And, you know, the Lakers would probably be the team, but I don't even know if they're really contending anymore, and what would the Lakers want to give up?
They just made a trade. They're trying.
They're trying, right.
They got Dorian Finney-Smith from the Nets.
Which was a great pickup.
And didn't even have to give up a first-round pick to do it. That's the other thing about the trade market. I think teams are so scared of the new CBA that asking prices for teams that are selling pieces is going down. You can get a quality piece for not a lot.
And also, the second-round pick now has greater value because of the CBA. So you could end up trading a second-round pick or a couple of them and be able to acquire a player. I just look at the Warriors right now, and they're 16-16, which tells me that they're on the bubble between contending or not contending. And if you're going to look at this team and think, which way are they going to go? They've got five more weeks, and I think it's 18 more games until the deadline. And if they are 24-24 at the deadline, do they buy or sell? I think that they're way more likely to buy than they are to sell.
Yeah, probably. I'd agree. All right, time for a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Greg Cosell. Of course, NFL Films. He breaks down the film better than anyone. We'll ask him everything going on with the Niners right now. That's coming up on the other side. It's Grandy in for Willard. Willard and Dibs coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
So what was on the menu? Seven steaks? Two whole chickens?
Well, I went and got a giant Wagyu steak for him.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
On 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, Nick Bosa, pro bowler, and we'll get to compete in the Pro Bowl. Is there even a game anymore? It's just like a bunch of mini games now, right?
Yeah, it's just skills and competitions and I wonder if our next guest actually watches the film and breaks down things like dodgeball and like player diving on mat to catch it. Or is he ready for the offseason by then?
Well, let's ask him. It's Greg Cosell, NFL Films, who joins us every week during football season. We're running out of these times to chat with Greg Cosell
which
this year.
Which makes me sad.
Which is very, very sad. But let's go out to the River Islands guest line, as all guests here on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Greg, Pro Bowl film, you in or out on that?
No, I don't do the Pro Bowl. I don't even know what they do with the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it's dodgeball now and a bunch of other middle school shenanigans. But I wouldn't expect you to waste your time with such frivolity, Greg.
No, I don't. The Pro Bowl's now between the championship game and the Super Bowl, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm not really into the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of fans are. Let's get to what really matters, though, which is Monday Night Football, Niners and Lions, earlier this week. Let's start on a positive. I want to ask you about Ricky Pearsall, because I know you've been a fan of his all season, and he had himself his best day as a pro, 8 catches, 141 yards, and a touchdown. What did you see specifically from Ricky Pearsall, and how can he help the Niners in the future?
Well, it's not a matter of being a fan. I liked his tape coming out of Florida, and I think that he has a chance to be a good pro. And I think, you know, he's a little quicker and faster probably than some think, although he's not a burner. I know he ran a good 40 time, but he doesn't play as a burner. But I think he's got a lot of juice to him. I think he can get, he needs a little more work in and out of breaks, but I think that'll come with time. Don't forget, he missed a ton of time. It's almost as if he started training camp in the middle of the season. So I think you have to take that into account. So coming off of this season and having a full off season, I think you'll see him become a significant part of their passing game next year. And, you know, you can line him up in different spots in the formation. He can line up outside. He can line up in the slot. He can run vertically based on his ability to run routes, not just on pure speed. So I think he gives what this offense demands. I think he'll be relatively complete for this offense.
And what this offense craves, Greg, something we've talked about throughout the year, is a man beater. And you look at the game against the Lions, it looked to me like they played a lot of man coverage. Were you seeing him able to beat man-to-man coverage regularly?
At times. I mean, no one wins all the time, and the Lions do play a lot of man, even with all the injuries they have. Aaron Glenn, their DC, has stayed with his belief in playing man and blitzing a good amount. So, you know, ultimately, you know, I think Pearsall will get better at that. He showed that in college. He showed some nuanced, subtle route-running skills, and I think when you make the transition from college to the NFL, where the corners are, you know, uniformly better, you know, you then have to understand how you apply your skills to beating NFL corners. So I think that will come in time.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us here on Willard and Dibs. Greg, considering what you're seeing from Ricky Pearsall, and the Niners have also had, of course, a really good season from Juwan Jennings. I know Ayuk is out, but let's just assume we're fast forward into next regular season and Ayuk is healthy and good to go again. Plus, you've got Deebo Samuel currently under contract and, of course, still on the roster. I'm not asking you to make a personnel decision, but is the 49ers offensive scheme and the way Kyle Shanahan likes to do things, is it worth having four wide receivers of that caliber on the roster, considering where else they might need to fill some holes? What do you think? Is obviously you'd rather have more good players than not, but is it worth it for the Niners to employ four receivers of that talent level?
Well, are you suggesting they trade someone, or they're not going to cut anybody? So I don't believe, barring something, you know, that we don't know will happen in the off season, but I don't think they're going to trade anyone. So they'll keep all everyone. You know, Samuel is sort of a multi-dimensional player who can line up in different spots. I think given the fact that Ayuk's going to be coming off a major knee injury, that they're definitely going to go into the offseason with all four guys. I mean, who knows when Ayuk's even ready to do anything really meaningful. So yeah, they'll keep all four guys, and how that plays out, you know, that'll be a function of what happens through the offseason.
Just thinking about it schematically and just watching them throughout the course of the year, how often do they go to 11 personnel with three wide receivers? And I'm looking at my notes, and I'm looking at a play where they drew a pass interference right before halftime, where they actually went with no running backs and one tight end and four wide receivers. Do they do that often enough to really have that many wide receivers involved in the plan?
Well, they haven't this year. You know, whether they, you know, again, every year is different. Coaches are always screwing around with things, trying to come up with different ways of doing things. You could see them, you know, look, for instance, this year, they played out of no backs and one tight end on 12 snaps. They played out of no backs and two tight ends on 13 snaps. That's for the whole season.
Wow.
Both those percentages are less than 2%. You know, when they play out of 11 personnel because of the use check factor, you know, they're one of the lower percentage 11 personnel offenses in the league. They don't even play out of 11, 50% of their snaps. But those percentages can change. You know, you never know, you know, how Kyle Shanahan this offseason decides to tweak his offense. That's what coaches do in the offseason. Because, you know, right now, through what have we played, 16 games, right? 16 games.
Yep.
Through 16 games, they're the highest percentage 21 personnel offense in the NFL because of Juszczyk.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way that they go about it schematically and formationally. Obviously, all of this comes back to the quarterback, and I thought Brock Purdy had one of his better halves and maybe better almost three-quarters of football this year. I mean, the final numbers are still pretty good in the game, 27 for 35, 377 yards, and three touchdowns, but two big mistakes that cost the Niners in the second half with those two interceptions. What did you see? What does the tape show you on Purdy's game? Was this drastically better than you've seen the rest of the year, and those two interceptions, what went into those decisions by Purdy from what you could see?
Yeah, I thought that the first interception, that was an example where I did not think Pearsall snapped out of his break as well as he should have, but Purdy just threw it too high. It was just an inaccurate throw, and he threw it right to Joseph, who was sitting in the deep middle on the coverage. He was a post safety, and he just threw it right to him. He just threw it too high. The second one is a really intriguing play, and I know that's probably been talked about a lot. You know, I think that based on what the Lions did with the coverage, it was probably, and I don't know what's in Purdy's head, but it was probably difficult for him to know whether that was cover three or what we call top-down inverted cover two, meaning that Joseph was actually a middle hole player in cover two. He was just playing the middle hole from the top down. Normally, when teams play cover two, the middle hole defender is a linebacker who comes from much closer to the formation and runs the seam. You know, you've all seen that. But I think this was top-down cover two. My sense is Purdy might have read it as cover three because he threw that ball as if Joseph was not going to be where he was. And in top down cover two, that's where where Joseph should have been. So that's my sense. Only Purdy could answer that. Kyle, you know, obviously others can answer it as well, but that was my sense looking at that play, that I think he read it as cover three when it was top-down, inverted cover two.
Fantastic breakdown from Greg Cosell here on 95.7 The Game. I want to ask you about George Kittle and just how you see on film his ability to do what he does, because watching it as, well, I'm not an amateur anymore, Greg, thanks to you. I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road, lightweight expert, but when I watch the film, it seems like George Kittle does things that most receivers and really no tight end can do. What do you see on film as far as him being able to get open so frequently?
Yeah, I mean, some of that's a function of scheme. For instance, you talked about the first half and how well Purdy played, and I thought that the offense was really highly schemed in the first half. I thought it was a really good game-planned offense. It broke down the discipline of the Lions' defense, and Kittle was a function of that. But Kittle is a really, really good player. I mean, he can win one-on-one. He has a great feel for finding voids and zones. We all know what he can do, run after catch. I mean, he's just a guy that I'm sure nobody loves tackling. And he just plays, you know, putting aside the X's and O's, he just plays with a passion that's infectious and contagious. You just love watching him play. But, I mean, you know, it's funny. I was thinking today, talking to my guys on the matchup show here, thinking, you know, this guy's a Hall of Famer. This guy's a Hall of Fame tight end. So he's a really, really good player, and he had another 1,000-yard season. I don't know what number it was for him in terms of 1,000 yards.
It's fourth. Yeah.
And obviously we know through the years, because of the way the Niners play with the run game, that he's as good a run blocker at the tight end position as there is in the league for a tight end that is a complete tight end. You know, there's other guys that are just run blockers. They're almost glorified tackles. But he's a complete multidimensional tight end, and he's a really, really good run blocker, and they use him in that way. And he's obviously a receiver that has three-level dimension traits. I mean, he's short, intermediate, and vertical. So he's a terrific player.
Greg Cosell with us here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. I want to switch over to the defense for a second, Greg. Obviously, it is not a good day for the Niners defensively. The Lions, though, are doing this to almost everybody they play. They put up 40 points. I want to focus on a single Niners player because he's one of the guys that is a free agent this offseason, and a decision has to be made by the 49ers on Talanoa Hufanga, who missed the majority of this season. It feels like, though, a little bit too often to my eye, and maybe I'm missing things that you can tell us about that you see on the tape, it seems like he's just relatively often taking bad angles to try to track down ball carriers, and it was on display a couple of times on Monday against the Lions. What is the tape showing you on Talanoa Hufanga, and how do you evaluate him as a safety?
Well, it's funny because when he came out of USC, I thought that he was essentially a box safety. Now, the Niners have not employed him solely in that way, because I remember when they had Gibson last year, Gibson would always be the tight end matchup when they went cover one, and he would be the deep post player. I don't think he's at his best, you know, based on film. That's all I can judge it on. Obviously, I don't know him. I always thought he was at his best closer to the line of scrimmage. I don't think he's at his best when he's playing the back end and coming downhill and having to take angles. I think he's much better when he can play closer to the line of scrimmage. So the question is, going forward, how do they see him in the context of the other safeties that they have? I think Malik Mustafa, I think, has played well in his opportunities. He's become a starter. Obviously, they think both Hufanga and Mustafa are better than Jair Brown because he's been benched. So they need to decide what they think of Jair Brown, because it's easy, you know, to get rid of, for people to say, well, this guy's not very good, let's move on, but you need someone to play. So they have to decide ultimately how they, if they keep him. You know, again, we don't know that.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
But if they keep him, what his role is. As I said, I think he's best closer to the line of scrimmage.
I'm looking at the defense, Greg, and it's something I've been harping on all year with you and with others, and it's the fact that they seem to rush four repeatedly. I know they're one of the least frequently blitzing teams in football, but even when they blitz, it feels like it's only blitzing one additional defender. When you look at the pass rush and the blitz package, what do you see on the film from the Niners as it relates to additional pressure?
Well, that's the way they play. They're one of the lowest percentage blitz defenses in the league, meaning five or more. This is the way they've chosen philosophically to play. You can do that if you're good at it. You know, and obviously when a team like the Lions scores a lot of points, you always think, oh, well, they should have put more pressure on the quarterback. But this is how they've chosen to play. I'm sure this goes back all the way back to OTAs and mini camps. This is their philosophy, whether it comes from Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, you know, who knows. But this is the way Nick Sorensen has gone about it this year. They don't blitz very much. They're not, when they do blitz, it's, they do a lot of the same kinds of tactics when they do blitz. So they're really a four-man D-line pass rush team. That's what they are. And then when you do that, you always have seven in coverage. So you feel, and they play more zone than man. So you feel like you can win the numbers game when you have seven to cover five eligibles. And this is the way they've chosen to play. You know, one can debate, and I'm sure they'll have this conversation internally. One can debate whether, hey, do we blitz more going into next year? Is this something that we want to change? You know, that will be a conversation that the coaches will absolutely have.
Greg, I'm curious. There's a lot of statistics, I don't know if you've seen them, that suggest that the 49ers offense, when trailing, and specifically in second halves, they tend to have a hard time moving the ball, and specifically through the air. I mean, it becomes a relatively obvious pass situation, and it's always more difficult to throw the ball when the defense knows a throw is coming. But I'm curious what you see on the tape and schematically from the 49ers offense. When you get in those relatively clear passing situations, is the way the 49ers attack defenses through the air, does it make it more difficult to try to throw for the Niners offense specifically? Because you look at Purdy's numbers, they are very, very bad in fourth quarters when trailing, but that was also the case for Jimmy Garoppolo. Is there something about the Shanahan offense and this specific style that makes it difficult to try to throw from behind?
It's a highly schemed offense, and sometimes when you get into those kinds of situations, you need to be able just to, you know, have guys that can win and have your quarterback make, you know, those kinds of throws versus man-to-man coverage. So, you know, I think that it's partly that. I think that's probably fair, because when they're at their best, what do we see when the Niners offense is at their best? We see a run game that's really effective, that keeps them on schedule. We see a pass game that often works off the run game. We see them being able to work what they do against predictable fronts, predictable coverages. So when you get into those fourth quarter situations or pure pass situations, that gets harder, because the defense has the tactical advantage. When it's long yardage or pure pass situations, the defense has the tactical advantage, so your schematics become totally different. So, you know, you have to win with, you know, by being able, in a sense, to be cliched, to make plays, not necessarily by out-scheming. So that's probably fair to some extent.
One of the biggest plays that was made was 3rd-and-12 for Detroit, down 13-7. And I want to get this right, and I'm going to take a chance because I've heard it both ways, but they ran the hook and ladder. I think it's a hook and lateral, but it seems like the colloquial has become hook and ladder, Amon-Ra to Williams for the touchdown. Which one is it, Greg? Is it hook and ladder or hook and lateral that they ran?
I mean, that's just a semantic.
I need you.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it. I mean, it's, you know, obviously that's a planned play, a scheme play. You know, Ben Johnson does those kinds of things, you know, I don't want to say regularly. You don't see it every week, but that is certainly part of their arsenal when they feel it's necessary. And I think they felt that the way the game was playing out in the first half, that they were not quite in control of it if they had to punt on that drive. So, you know, they called that, and obviously that's, you know, you're not defending that, so you have no idea that's coming.
Right.
It was just really, really well done. I mean, it was beautifully done. And Williams, you know, Jamison Williams, there's probably three or four guys in the league that have terrifying speed, and he's one of them.
Was it Mark Duper involved in that famous play, Miami-San Diego, that went to overtime, Greg? It's a game that was before my partner Mark Grandy's lifespan, but that, to me, was the first time I ever saw the hook and lateral.
I believe Don Strock was the quarterback.
Look at you. Look at you, Greg Cosell.
Yeah.
And Kellen Winslow with a blocked field goal, I believe, to help force overtime. Like, man could barely
was
walk.
That, I think, was the Winslow game where he caught so many balls and literally had to be carried off the field, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, epic game back in, in the playoffs in the early 80s. Yeah, you whippersnappers, pull up a chair, let Uncle Greg and I just walk you through it.
I'll have to go hunt down
the tape. Okay. I started at Films here in 79, so I remember it.
Man, yeah, I was in middle school there, and I think I recreated it on the blacktop.
Appreciate
the next
thanks.
Day. Yeah, you're welcome, Greg.
I got one more for you, Greg, before we let you get on out of here. I asked you about Hufanga. I want to ask, though, about one of the young Niners defensive backs. You brought up Malik Mustafa at the safety position. I know you've also talked glowingly about Renardo Green. I know you liked his tape coming out of Florida State. He's been kind of thrust into a starting role because of some Niners injuries and absences. Mooney Ward is going to be a free agent as well, and the 49ers have a decision to make there. It seems like he probably won't be coming back because of, you know, just roster construction issues and money and all of that. Renardo Green, his rookie year, now that it's nearly over, what have you seen from the rookie cornerback?
I would say far more positives than negatives. And I think that, see, again, I think this is part of a philosophy that they'll have to discuss in the offseason, because I think, again, this is all based on tape, I think Green's best trait is press man. And this is not a press man team. Now, when I say press man, I don't mean you play at 100% of the snaps, but I think that's his best trait. He came from a school, Florida State, where he started for 2 years. They were a heavy man team and a heavy press man team, and I think he excels at that. So I think you want to give him an opportunity to do that. But I think there's been far more positives than negatives. He's going to be a starter in this league, and he'll start for the Niners next year.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Greg, appreciate the time as always. We'll catch up with you for one last time next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, thanks. That's Greg Cosell, NFL Films. Does a great job as always, and he joins us every week here on the River Islands Guest Line. He got me a couple of times there early, Dibs, but I bounced back the rest of the interview.
You hung in there. You hung in there pretty well, but
I think you got off clean.
Yeah. I've kind of tried to figure it out with the things that he is most interested in answering. Yeah. It's not about contracts and free agency and hypotheticals. It's about the film. And if you stick to the film, you're going to be doing pretty well. And I had to ask him about the original hook and lateral, which, if you get a chance, kids out there, 1982 playoffs, the Chargers and Dolphins into overtime. Chargers win it 41-38. Kellen Winslow Sr., not his felonious son, but Kellen Winslow Sr., with a singular performance for the ages in the playoffs and a San Diego playoff win.
This is probably a generational thing, but when I think of a hook and lateral or a hook and ladder, my mind immediately goes to Boise State over Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl.
Of course.
That was an incredible hook and ladder.
And that is still one of the greatest bowl games in the history of college football.
Boise State was back in the Fiesta Bowl, and this time they lost to Penn State.
And I saw something over the weekend that the player involved in that, and he runs over and proposes to his cheerleader girlfriend.
Yeah.
They're still together.
Wow.
And
how about
it's
that?
Like 19 years later.
So really that, it's been that long?
I think it's been 19 years, but I'll look it up.
Wow.
It's been a long time, but they are...
That was like the 05 Fiesta Bowl is what you're telling me?
That sounds about right.
Or 06 if it was early 2026 or 2006.
Quick Googleage, and it's, I think 2010.
It was 2010.
Yeah, so 14 or 15 years ago.
Okay. That sounds a little bit more accurate.
I know, it's 07, Boise State over Oklahoma. So, 18 years.
Hell of a football game.
Yep. A hook and lateral. Was that for the two-point conversion or was that for the touchdown?
No, that was for the touchdown.
They also ran the fumble Ruski.
I don't remember the fumble Ruski. They scored the touchdown to force overtime on the hook and lateral at the very end of the fourth quarter, and then in overtime, they went for two to win, and they used the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, the Statue of Liberty, not the fumble Ruski.
Yeah.
The Statue of Liberty.
Statue of Liberty on the front left pylon. They run in, and they celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time you do radio with Lo Neal, ask him about the time that they ran the bumble Ruski, and Lo Neal was a part of it and in the pros.
Yeah.
And they ran it, and the big fellow was able to pick it up. And he has a great story about how he had to wait, and he had to hold it and wait, and then he picked it up, and he ran in for the end zone.
is kind of not, it wasn't a fumble Ruski play, but the fake fumble that the Lions ran against the Bears a couple of weeks ago. You remember that?
Yeah.
Jared Goff pretending that he lost the ball and running backwards and then throwing. I don't know who he threw it to. It might have been to Jameson Williams for a touchdown, or maybe it was Laporta. Don't remember who it was, but it worked to perfection. Yeah. They were wide open against the
Bears.
And
just looking at the playoffs, and I know the field is not completely set, but if you start to think about your dream Super Bowl matchup and who you want to win the Super Bowl, it's easy to think about who you don't want to win the Super Bowl. Like, the Rams, no. The Chiefs, absolutely not.
The Eagles, no.
Exactly. So, yeah. If we think about who you don't want to win it, then you think about who you do want to win it.
I got mine.
Is it Detroit or Minnesota?
Detroit for me.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know how likely that is considering their defense. But for me, it's Detroit versus Buffalo. I have no problem rooting
Bet
for Buffalo.
Bet the over. I mean, the over-under probably beat 60. That game feels like a 48-47 kind of a game.
It feels like every game Detroit plays is going to be an over-under.
I'm also in on Detroit. My good friend Derek Petrak, shout out Contra Costa Country Club. He's a Detroit guy. And my old neighbor Cameron Davis, who's on the Detroit staff. So I've got definite family ties to Detroit. But if it can't be Detroit, I'd like to see Minnesota get it done.
I think Minnesota's number two in the
Sammy
AFC
D.
for me. Who do you want out of the AFC? You with the Bills as well, or what?
Baltimore, Lamar Jackson. I'd like to see Lamar get it done. Derrick Henry.
I know there's no one left over from that team other than the coach, but they beat the Niners in the Super Bowl years ago. I can't, no.
Something about Lamar Jackson and what he's become as a player, because everybody was deriding him as a guy who can't win from the pocket, and now he's turned out to be a pretty damn good pocket quarterback. He still runs a lot.
Quietly had an incredible year. Incredible year. I'm not sure why he's not getting more MVP consideration.
Agreed.
I guess maybe because he won it last year, but I mean, he has been amazing. Amazing.
You don't want to see another Harbaugh versus Harbaugh Super Bowl?
I could get behind the Chargers. Chargers might be my number two
that I would
want to see get there. Part of it is because Harbaugh, also because their quarterback. You know where he went to school, right? We don't need to say
Oregon State. Exactly. Did I get that wrong?
I'll leave it there.
All right.
Time for a break. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. And the Warriors are back in action tonight versus the Sixers, which means Warriors Live starts with me at 6. I'm running double duty. I got you covered for Warriors Live at 6. It's presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. More Dibs and Grandy. I'm in for Willard coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard today. He's back on Monday. It's Grandy and Dibs holding down the fort the next 2 days this week. Welcome in. Willard and Dibs continues. Just got off the phone with Greg Cosell, NFL Films. It's sad that we're nearing the end of the Niners season, Dibs. I mean, at this point last year, we were still crossing our fingers that a Super Bowl trip was in the cards.
It was.
Ultimately, they fell short, of course. But now we're looking at one more Niners game, and it means nothing other than draft position.
Right.
That's really the only thing that matters. They have already locked up worst place, last place in the NFC West, which means we know all of their opponents. For next year already. How about that?
Funny and that you said that.
Hell of an easy schedule coming up next year.
And we'll get to that in a moment. But I was doing my show prep yesterday, getting ready for doing the show with you. And, you know, yesterday it kind of hit me, Jan 1, new year, new Dibs, and I'm ready to get back to it. And I actually had that conversation with myself. What if they beat Arizona? If they beat Arizona, is there any possible way that they can jump Arizona and be third in the division? So I went through all of the permutations. Head-to-head with Arizona would be even. The next tiebreaker is divisional record. It would be even. The next tiebreaker is common opponents, which would be even. The next tiebreaker is conference record, which would be even. The next tiebreaker is strength of victory. And that is the teams that you beat and their record versus the teams that you're team you're tied with and the teams that they beat and their record. And
I think wins. Beating a good team
correct.
Helps you.
And I do believe that that is where the Niners are the lesser team, because Arizona beat the Chargers and the Niners beat Dallas in one of the only victories that's not a common one. And maybe Arizona beat Dallas as well. Maybe not, but
I don't remember.
I can't remember what it was, but it got all the way down to strength of victory before the Niners actually lost the tiebreaker.
That's crazy.
Which is tiebreaker number five.
I didn't go through it myself. I just, got the news release. Oh, here are the Niners' opponents, and I just accepted it for fact.
Which is great, because it's the AFC South weak, it's the NFC South weak, and then it's the fourth place teams in the East, the Giants, the North, the Bears, and the... I guess that would be the...
Last place in the... Who are we missing? Oh, the South. No, they play the whole teams. They play everyone in the South.
It's in the AFC. It's an AFC division. It might be... It's not the West. It might be the East. And they play the Patriots again.
No, it's the North. They play the Cleveland Browns.
Thank you. It's Cleveland. So your bonus games are Cleveland, Chicago, and the Giants. And you also play...
Maybe the two worst divisions in football.
Right.
In the AFC and NFC South.
You play Houston, they're good. Indy, who's your quarterback? Jacksonville, yikes. And Tennessee, who's your quarterback?
I probably got a new one next year.
Right, and you also play Tampa, good. But I think that game's actually here next year. And not that it matters. And you've got Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina.
Actually, is in Tampa.
Okay. I mean, again, so you go to Tampa second straight time.
I'll run through them really quick. So your home dates, we don't know the actual dates, but your home opponents. Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks, division. Falcons, Panthers, Jaguars, Titans, Bears. That's at home.
Yep.
On the road, Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks again. Then the Browns, Texans, Colts, Saints, Giants, Buccaneers.
Yeah. The only thing that is a little bit irksome is the amount of travel. And depending on how those games stack, you do go to Cleveland and New York and Tampa. Those are all long trips. You hope that a couple of those are grouped together.
Indianapolis, too.
Yep.
New Orleans.
Yeah, those are, central time. Not quite as far, but you hope for some grouping to where you can have at least one trip where you get two games and you don't have to fly out and fly back. And the other thing that happened this year that you would hope the NFL doesn't screw you on again is rest differential.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this in the offseason, and, my partner Mark Willard and many other people kind of poo-pooed it. But now that you saw it play out, the amount of games where they had less rest than the opponent was the worst in more than 20 years. And Warren Sharp, I don't know if you follow Sharp Football on Twitter, but
it's a great job.
He's really into a lot of these deep, deep dives into analytics. And I do think when you look at this schedule, so if the Niners don't get a bad schedule on rest again next year, the opponents are pretty weak. And if they have a good grouping and a properly placed bye, this team should be really good next year.
Yeah, I mean, they have an opportunity to beat up on some bad teams, no doubt. And nowhere near as challenging schedule-wise as it was this year. You know what? We're in this mode right now. Let's just let's ask this question as it relates to the Niners, because we do got to change gears in about 7 minutes when we've got Dr. Brian Feely of UCSF coming on to talk injuries as we run through cleared to play as we do every week. That's coming up in just a little bit. We've already talked about this for the Warriors, and we'll get back to them a little bit later on. 2024 was rough for the Niners as well, though, Dibs. What is the one thing the Niners need to do? I guess since the season is essentially over, we can focus this on the offseason. What is the one thing the Niners need to do this offseason to ensure the 2025 season is better than it was in 2024?
They need to get into a warfare mentality, which is to say they need to dig some trenches. They need to get into the trenches, and they need to rebuild the trenches. Because I look at the team right now, offensively, and I see a right guard who was a rookie who was fantastic. As a rookie right guard, he was great. Your right tackle needs an upgrade. Your center is not good enough. Your left guard was a revolving door, and your left tackle is a Hall of Famer, but he's maybe down to his last season. I don't know what he has left, and this is no disrespect, but he was injured this year. He had personal tragedy. But I think coming back next year, he'll be 36 or 37.
At the very least, you got to start thinking about life after him.
Correct.
Yeah.
So for me, your first round pick in the 2025 draft, no matter where it is, has got to be a tackle. Maybe a future left tackle, a current right tackle, somebody who can step in and be an anchor piece to your offensive line for the future. You go out in free agency and you get a center, and then you can figure out the left guard from there. Additionally, on the other side of the ball, if you're going to run this wide nine, and the wide nine...
Yeah, explain it to us.
Well, the wide nine is where you have the defensive lineman splits are very wide, and you see Nick Bosa a lot of times almost out by the numbers, and he is very effective in that. But when you have your best defensive player probably, what, 15 feet from the ball, it allows offenses to run straight up the gut. And you saw it over and over and over again this year. Kyren Williams and James Conner and all these other running backs, James Cook from Buffalo, inside the tackles going right down the middle. If you want to run the wide nine, you need to have good interior defensive linemen. And this year, you had Jordan Elliott. He was good. He did a nice job. And, you know, end of list. Okwuanu was good in spots, but
Malik Collins was healthy all year.
Yeah.
He's more of an interior pass rusher than a run stopper.
And Javon Hargrave is the same. Yep. So you need to go out in the draft or free agency and find a 320, 330-pound plugger, a guy who can eat up two blockers and allow Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw to do what they do best, which is fly to the ball. And this year, your run defense wasn't very good because your interior run defense was bad. So for me, for the Niners, forget wide receiver and Debo. Mm. Forget Brock Purdy and his contract. And yeah, the secondary, you've got some questions. For me, it's D-tackle and offensive line. That's what needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you can let us know what you think the Niners need to do. The one thing they have to do this offseason to make sure 2025 is better than 2024, you can give us a call, shoot us a text, 888-957-9570. We're going to go to Clear to Play here in about 5 minutes, but we'll take your call right after if you got something for us. For me, Dibs, I zoomed out a little bit, made it a little more macro, and maybe that's cheating, but I agree with everything that you said. For me, the one thing the Niners need to do above all else, it's adjust their philosophy, and part of it is what you're talking about. In fact, I wrote down here on my notes, stop drafting skill positions, go for the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. Everything you just said is 100% true. But to get a little bit more under that umbrella, I went with change your philosophy, to adjust your philosophy. Because Kyle Shanahan, I know you hate it, but you got to start caring about special teams. Special teams was bad enough that it cost you multiple games this year. And it's not just the kicker missing kicks. Even if you take out the missed kicks, they're the worst special teams group in the NFL. Special teams, absolutely terrible. Shanahan likes to kind of set it and forget it. You got to at least put enough effort into it to make a change that it doesn't hurt you again. And even more for Kyle Shanahan to adjust his philosophy. Gone are the days in the NFL where you can just be as conservative as all get out. You got to adjust a little bit. You got to be a little bit more aggressive. You got 4th and 2 from the 40-yard line. Don't kick a 57-yard field goal. Please, Kyle, go for it. You got Christian McCaffrey. You've got Brandon Ayuk. You got George Kittle. When you have your weapons and it's 4th and short, go for it. Please. You will get it way more often than you don't. So maybe I'm cheating a little bit, Dibs, but it's kind of a 3-pronged thing for me. Adjust your philosophy. Stop going for those skill position players, beef up on the interior, worry about special teams for the first time in a while, and adjust the way that you call plays and your aggressiveness. Those three things, I think, will go a long way into helping the Niners next year.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you look at the Detroit game, and they put up the stat on Monday night about the Lions, and they go for it on 4th down the most in football, and they converted it at a very high percentage as well. And the 49ers don't oftentimes go for it.
They had the 4th and goal touchdown to Amon-Ra
on
Monday.
And, you know, yeah. Kyle is more conservative, and I'm not asking him to change his stripes because he never will, but just to be a little bit more aggressive. And what I saw from Kyle on Monday night was actually a little refreshing. You know, you ran a couple of trick plays and you went for it on a 4th down. I did think that it was interesting that he tried a 58-yard field goal with Jake Moody.
We all knew that was missing. Oh, man.
Right, and I think that he also knew that it was missing. It felt to me like a moment where he was saying to Jake Moody, go out there and show me something here, kid, because the thing about Jake Moody is he's got the leg. He's got the leg to make a 65 or even a 70-yarder. That 58-yarder would have been good from 65 had it been straight.
Wide left.
So it's not a question of leg strength with Moody, and we can say it's the ankle, even though it's actually his kicking side ankle. It's not the plant ankle.
Yeah.
So it looked like he put enough thud into the ball for it to go if it was straight. he's dealing with major confidence issues, and I would bet if that game was a meaningful game for the Niners, he's not going for a 58-yarder in that spot. That felt to me almost like he was trolling the kicker.
Well, you know what Shanahan would have done if it was a big-time game.
Punt?
Yeah, he would have punted.
Get out of here.
I would rather have the field goal attempt than a punt. Even if you have a kicker that hasn't made anything recently, which is the case.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at AlmaSed.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.